On the Big Breakfast Catch-Up with Claresy, Matt and Kimber, we crossed to Helsinki, Finland to find out why they've been voted the happiest place on earth.
He was a happy little chappy,
wasn't he? Yeah.
Indeed.
Marco Pierre White, or Marco, shares his love of Perth, and he really does love Perth.
Certainly does.
Matt tries to solicit calls on a very sensitive subject.
And producer Tom loses his mind chatting with the stars of Aladdin.
Wake up with the Big Breakfast. Claresy, Matt and Kimber. Weekdays from 6 a.m. on Mix 94.5.
You've got a smile on your face, Matt.
Well, I mean, what do you know about Finland? I don't know a lot about Finland.
No, not a great deal.
They are the happiest country in the world.
Finland. They had the Olympics, Summer Olympics in 52. I remember that.
Yeah, Helsinki. Yeah,
Helsinki. All those, the Summer Olympics, of course, all those years ago. But Finland has overtaken Norway to become the happiest nation on earth, Kimber.
Gee, that's pretty good. I mean, to put that in perspective, the study has also, this is on the 2018 World Happiness Report.
Yeah, it's a UN report.
The US is in 18th place because they say there's a few issues there with crisis of obesity, substance abuse and depression. So the US are down at 18. So Finland must be doing all right to be right at the top.
Hey, New Zealand ahead of Australia. What's going on there?
Oh, that doesn't seem fair.
It's all about Finland. Let's cross the finish line here to our man on the streets. We mentioned it, the 1952 Summer Olympic city, Helsinki. Mika Halu Hunkinen is on the line. Our man on the street, welcome.
Hello, Claresy, Mac and Kimber. I'm so happy to be on the Perth radio station, Mix 94.5.
Mika, look, what happens to people in Finland if they aren't happy?
If they're not happy, we deport them. I know you guys have really tough immigration rules, but for us, we let anyone in. We have one question. Are you happy? If they're happy, yes. Okay, come on in. If you're happy, no. We say, go to Sweden. No, honestly, we just send them straight to the sauna because you can't be angry in a sauna.
And Mika, obviously we think of Finland as cold. Essentially, I think that's all I know about Finland. Tell us more. What's Finland known for?
Finland, we're known for, we invented the ice skates for the ice skating because, you know, we got like 400,000 lakes and then when they freeze, they're great for skating. So your Stephen Bradbury, he got his gold medal because we invented ice skates. And, you know, we have 73 days when the sun doesn't even go down. So even Kimber could get a tan in Finland.
Hey, Vic, I really need to know, 70% of forest there, you know, we're speaking about it across the country. Is it a love of hiking that keeps you all happy there in Finland?
Oh, yeah, we love hiking, particularly naked hiking, Claresy. There's nothing more freeing than getting your kid off and walking through the Finnish forest. But, you know, other reason we have lots of trees? It's the Hyde Center's workshop.
Oh,
yeah,
of
true.
Course.
We believe in shelter in Finland.
Oh, God, Mika, you do sound happy. But surely there, look, we notice Australia is number 10 on the list.
Yeah.
I mean,
surely there is something that Australia has that Finland wants.
You guys need to cheer up a little bit, I think. But no, okay, seriously, we would love some of your warm weather, okay? I mean, you know, Finland's great and everything, but it's pretty cold most of the time. And we all know what happens to a gentleman's manhood when they get out of a cold pool.
Oh, yeah.
But try living that 24/7.
Hell, shrinkage. Hey, Mika, we really appreciate today. We know you've had a recent holiday in Bali. That's affected your accent slightly, but it's been wonderful to chat to you on the streets here of Helsinki.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm just so happy to get to know you guys.
Finland, why wouldn't you be?
The Big Breakfast with Claresy, Matt and Kimber.
You can hear that we have a special guest. And you could talk about lots of things. You could bring up Michelin or talk about the Mick Jagger of food or whatever. But we just want our next guest to be as comfortable as though he's amongst his bulls and pigs on his beautiful estate there, the Rudlow Arms. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only in Perth, Marco Pierre White.
Good morning.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Lovely to be here. I'm having a great morning.
Excellent. Oh, good start already.
Good. We like to hear.
Really good morning. I'm looking forward to my lunch, actually.
No, it's good to see you.
That's how we feel every day, but it's normally just a sandwich and underwhelming.
Well, it's good food in Australia. And secondly, this part of the world has really good food. Because I first came down here about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, and I went to Margaret River.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some of the wines I had there, like the Chardonnay from Vas Felix, was just extraordinary.
Magnificent.
And then one of your famous chefs cooked lunch for me in the great A.A. Gill, who's unfortunately no longer with us. He was one of those magical writers. And we sat down drinking Chardonnay. And the chef was a man called Jock Sonfrillo, who used to work for me years ago. He introduced me to something called magpie goose.
Okay.
Right.
which is very rare and very hard to get hold of. And I'm not joking, it was one of those great gastronomic moments where I don't remember the last time something impacted on me so emotionally, which I had to put my knife and fork down and just say, this has got to be one of the finest pieces of meat I've ever had.
Wow.
I mean, it was really amazing. But that whole Margaret River is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, eating on the beach, you know, going to vineyards. I mean, totally, totally sporty. And then I went to the, but before I got there, I just remembered now, I went to a place called Bibb and Tucker.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep. I love
on the beach
and
in Fremantle.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, Leighton.
And I had lunch with a journalist who prepared the starter and the chef did the chicken,
right.
Spit roast chicken. Yeah. And that was sensational. I had asparagus to start with, white asparagus. And the what a great lunch that was. Mm. But, you know, what was interesting is when I got in the car then to drive down to Fremantle, do you know something? A little bit of me wanted a little bit more. And I always think when you go to a restaurant and it's time to leave, you want a little bit more. And I just thought, wow, so it's really good to be back here. And then today, I've just said, rather than just dine in one restaurant, what I'd like to do is go to five or six restaurants and almost treat it like a tapas lunch where you have a little something in every restaurant.
A little sample?
So yeah. I get, because I'm only here for a couple of days, so just have a little taste of as much as I can.
Right, everything on Good Food Month.
That's well, you are in town for Good Food Month, and I believe it's your first trip down to Albany, though, isn't it? You're going
as far as...
Because I was going to ask you, do you know what to expect? But obviously you know exactly what we have in store.
Well, what's extraordinary about Australia, wherever I've been catapulted, whichever corner of Australia I've been catapulted into, you just eat so well.
Mm.
I mean, you really do. And I've been now coming to Australia, I don't know, 10, 12 years, and I come a lot. So I sort of come 2-3 times, sometimes 4 times a year. And what's extraordinary is over that period of time, how it's evolved as the eating out and the produce. I mean, it's just amazing. It was good when I first came, but it gets better and better and better every year. And I mean, like, you know, if you look at what they're doing now, I mean, like with the Good Food Month, it's just amazing. I mean, and I went to I had some of the noodles and some of the knickknacks from Canberra the other day from the night noodle market. Mm. I mean, you know, you sit there and you think, this is proper cooking.
Yes.
It's proper real food, good ingredients, delicious. So I had about 6-7 of them. And when you think for $10, you just sit and you go, wow.
It's accessible, isn't it?
The quality of food. Mm. And I don't know any place in the world you get food of that that quality and cooking of that with that much skill for $10. I really don't.
You're very welcome to stay.
Yeah, stay.
I know. Well, I like it.
In Australia,
it'd be very easy to stay. Yeah. I'd like to suffer from Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes. Well, we'll keep you.
Yeah,
we'll
keep you. Kidnap me.
25 years ago, it was a very good meat pie and sauce. And that was about it.
Things have changed. Yeah.
It's amazing. But when you think, but also they're the masters of, you go into restaurants which, and I, because I always work things back in my head to Sterling, and you look at you're paying blob dollars, and you just think the environment you're sitting in, the quality of the food and the service you're getting is amazing.
Mm.
And where I think Australia really do it better than most people in the world is actually from that sort of middle market upwards. They do it really, really well. So you can eat in a restaurant, proper food, real service, and you don't get this enormous bill. Mm. And if I think back to London and I think, what would I get for the same amount of money spent?
Mm. Yep.
I don't know. I mean, seriously, I'd have to pay a lot more. So I think they do a really good job out here.
Mm. Modern cooking. Now, obviously, you're the godfather of modern cooking. That's a label that's applied to you. With so much talk these days about going back to older styles of cooking, remembering the way Nonna cooked, or is it how do you define modern cooking now?
Well, I mean, if you look at chefs of today across the world, it's an extension of them. They show off their travels.
Mm.
I mean, especially like if you look at Australia, how many of your young chefs have left Australia, gone to wherever they've gone in the world, come back to Australia, and it's an extension of their journey. It's an extension of their life, really, on a plate, which I think is quite beautiful.
Mm.
I'm not that exciting, really, because I'm very basic and I just believe that the more you do to food, the more you take away from food.
Mm, yep.
And so I was always a classicist because I was trained in that French school of French gastronomy.
Mm.
And so I stick to my roots because my mother used to always say, a tree without roots is a piece of wood.
Yeah.
And, You know, I just think if you're going to make a risotto, for example, or you're going to do a roast or a braised dish, then put all your energies into making it perfect. As I say, I think the more you do to food, the more you take away food. And make food, allow food to be the artist. I mean, because Mother Nature is a true artist. Mm. We're just the cooks. And I think the more you work on it, the more you take away from it. And that's what I like about Australia, really. They have this understanding of food, and their approach is quite a simple approach with classical foundation. Mm. And I dined in a restaurant in Sydney the other night, and I went, well, the restaurant I was meant to go to was called Fratelli's Paradiso, which is one of the great Italian restaurants. And my friend was outside, and he said, "It's closed tonight, Marco." I said, "What do you mean it's closed? It's never closed." He said, "Well, there's a sign on the door saying closed for staff party."
That's your hyper.
So I had to go across the road. So I just went across the road. It was easy. Yes. And I don't even know the name of the restaurant. Yeah. And it was a Monday night, and it was doing rather well. But the quality of the ingredients and the simplicity of the cooking, whoever was in the kitchen, it was an open kitchen, which I kind of like. I like to watch chefs. It's like watching a cooking show.
We've got a lot more of those now,
And the quality of the food and the ingredients was really, really good. And I think, you know, when you have great ingredients, which you do in Australia, and you have that confidence to be simple with them, you don't have to do much. All your energy goes into the cooking of them and serving it hot. I thought it was really good.
Brilliant. A third generation with Grandad and your father being chefs, mate. It's wonderful to hear your philosophy on things, and great to see you here in the West.
Oh, it's wonderful, to be here. I'm looking forward to my lunch. Yeah, I really
me
am.
Me too. I want to know what you're having.
I'm going to go to 5-6 restaurants, I think. And just have a little sort of knick-knack in every one, because indulge.
Beautiful. Enjoy while you're here. And you head down south and enjoy those beautiful wines affected by those sea breezes. Marco Pierre White here for goodfoodmonth.com. Check it all out until March 31st.
This'll fill you up. Everything Perth for brekkie. Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Claire, Matt and Kimber.
And this morning we're talking about some of the weirdest things that you've seen on public transport. And this is after a chap in Wollongong and his lady friend, who he only met on the train, were caught in the middle of the day doing a lewd act on the train, and obviously people were very upset and they were caught by the police and went in front of the magistrate, and he's like, "What? I just did it because that's what
she offered."
She offered. So, you know, strange thing to see, and surely that can't be happening to many people. We'll go to some calls. Jim's in Ellenbrook. Jim, what's the weirdest thing you've seen on public transport?
Well, how you going, guys?
Good, mate.
It actually happened to me as well in Europe on a train.
Right. Unsolicited, Jim.
Oh, we love Europe.
Oh, so, Jim, you can relate to this gentleman. Did you find yourself in front of a magistrate's court?
No, nowhere near that. It was night time, and I was actually on my way to go and see the centenary test at Lourdes in 1980.
Sure. Oh, yes.
Yes. This woman decided that this was going to be the best thing that she could do, and I never knew her name, didn't know what she looked like or anything like that.
Don't we love it when we're, you know, travellers and the locals look after us?
Oh, I'm all up for people feeling liberated.
Yes.
And, you know, they can do whatever they like. But I suppose it's only mainly if other people are exposed to it that the problem comes in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, the thing about it was on a train carriage, and there were five other people in there anyway.
Oh,
right,
really?
Okay. Oh. On the way to the test match, middle stump. Well done, Jim.
Oh, God bless the 80s, Jim.
Yes, she barred me out. There's no problem.
Hey! We can do cricket puns all day.
Okay.
Jimmy?
Ian is in Glenforest. Ian, what's the weirdest thing you've seen on public transport? Surely you're not going to say it's also happened to you on a train.
No, definitely not. I was on the London Underground, and there was a very nicely dressed lady, and she had this fur-lined jacket on, you know, fur around the neck.
Yes.
The look. And then it moved, and it was two pet rats.
Oh, really?
Oh, dear.
So as a little sort of shawl or scarf.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like. But then they sort of moved around and you know, changed positions, and yeah. I'm not quite sure where you take your rats on the underground, to be honest.
With the mangy-looking rats you see in the big cities of Europe?
No, these were very nice posh rats. Right. They're obviously pets.
Posh rats.
Posh rats. Gee, you don't hear that very often.
Sounds like a new Disney cartoon.
They were Burberry, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
That's amazing.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you, Ian.
No worries.
Everything Perth for Brekkie. Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Clancy, Matt and Kimber.
Back in Perth, how are you finding it?
Amazing. Really nostalgic to be back here and see the uni and all the wonderful places we used to hang out, and excited to come back in July.
It's changed a bit, hasn't it?
It has, yeah, it has. This complex has changed as well, like Crown and in the city there's been some wonderful changes. So that's really cool to see Perth evolving.
Last time we spoke to you, just sort of getting sort of your teeth stuck into the role, how are you finding it now from Brisbane?
Yeah, it's wonderful now. I mean, we've been doing it for a year and a half now, so we're sort of well and truly engrossed in the show, and we absolutely love it. I think the audiences so far in Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane are having a great time, and I hope that the Perth audiences do the same.
I've spoken to a few people who are like me and like, you know, closet Aladdin fans. They're in that 35-year-old demographic, and they're like, oh my God, Aladdin's coming.
Yeah.
For those that have seen nothing about the show, what are they going to say?
Well, I think if they were fans of the film, they can expect a really beautiful, nostalgic experience coming back to revisit, you know, the movie that they saw when they were little. They can now see it on stage, told in beautiful colour and dance and song. And for those people who don't know anything about Aladdin, I think it will blow them away. And maybe I'm a bit biased, but I think it's a really wonderful, beautiful Broadway show that they should definitely come and see.
The costumes and stuff are mind-blowing.
Absolutely.
I've been twice, so I can vouch for it. But for me, without giving too much away, the magic carpet is phenomenal.
It is. It's beautiful. You can always hear the audience gasping either, you know, with awe or in disbelief when that carpet takes flight. And it's really a magical experience in the theatre.
You got yourself a new right-hand man, a new genie.
Gareth is wonderful in the role, and I'm so excited for people in Perth to see him do it. Yeah, and we're having such a fun time in Brisbane.
What does he bring to the role?
What is really cool about the genie, and Gareth will tell you, is that each actor who plays it gets to bring a huge part of themselves to the role, and I think that's what makes the role so wonderful, is that they get to inject this role with their personality, and Gareth has such a wonderful personality off stage as well as on.
Just finally, what will it be like playing in your former kind of hometown, family and friends here?
I have some friends here. Most of my family's back on the in Sydney, okay. but I have some friends here. But I think it will just be really cool to come and perform for my old tutors who are at Whopper and the people that I used to work with and study with. So I'm really excited for them to see the show.
Sent you any messages?
Absolutely. Already they're like, so have you got any opening night tickets?
we're all after those. Beautiful. Good luck. I'm sure you enjoy it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Just dropping the hints.
Yeah.
See,
yeah,
Tom's on the top rating. Yeah, he's like, again, it's, like,
there's three, there's like top five, and you're you're number two on the list.
I know what to, I know what to say.
Gareth, welcome to Perth.
Thank you.
How'd you find that out there?
Yeah, good. It was really nice, actually. Performing in such an intimate space was really exciting. And to be able to stand and sing and not be, you know, running a marathon as I'm, you know, doing Friend Like Me was kind of weird to do because I'm so used to doing it the other way.
Yeah.
But it's great. I love those sort of smaller, intimate events that, you know, you can really connect with each person in the audience and know that there were people out there that knew every single word of the song. I was like, thank you, because I'm about to forget it. Which one was that? Yeah, great.
That
I know what's coming.
That was me singing in the background. I was like, don't sing too loud. I think I might be out of here. Been in the role for a short period of time now, full on, but you were obviously the bat understudy for quite a while.
Yeah, so I started with the show back in Sydney as the offstage standby for the genie, and got to take over the role in Melbourne, which is my hometown, 6 weeks before we closed. So I've kind of done that, and then I took over, sort of hit the ground running in Brisbane, and now I'm really excited to sort of bring it to Perth, and because I've never been, this is my first day ever in Perth and across this side of Australia. So everyone here tonight saw my debut performance in Perth.
and they loved it. What did Michael teach you about the role?
I think the biggest thing that Michael taught me was just to have fun with it, to go out there every night and find new things and find, you know, exciting things to play with. I mean, the role of Genie is that kind of role that you can just, you know, if you feel a little cheeky with a different line, then you can throw that line in there because, you know, like Ainsley said before, it was... you know, I can put my own personality in it, which is something that a lot of people don't really get to do with roles. But the Genie's one of those really sort of little gems that you get where you can throw your own personality in there.
So like, do they give you much room to ad lib, or is it all?
I mean, there is a blueprint that we have to follow, but there are places that you can that I can, you know. And I think it's what's great is that with the Aussie humour as well, I think. I can, you know, I know we, being Australian, we know how each other sort of, what we sort of find funny, and which has been really great because I can throw that in and know that people hopefully will find it as funny as I do. Otherwise, I just stand there on stage laughing by myself and then going, no, no one, let's keep going with the show. Okay.
I've seen a lot of plays and they have an intermission and I'm like, oh, why do they have an intermission? But your role's a very physical role. It I couldn't is. Believe, like, seeing Michael before. How have you found that, you know, 6 weeks in?
Like, if you are, I mean, asking me now, it's great. Asking my body what it's like, my body will give you a complete different answer. It's been great because I've had the opportunity to sort of, little by little, kind of almost train myself up to being in 8 shows a week, which has been great. When the weekend comes, it's definitely a, you know, as little movement as possible to let my muscles and bones recover from the week that's just been. But then it recharges you just to do it all again for the next. And knowing that, you know, you're going out there and giving the audiences stuff that they've don't expect, you know, and then they think that they've seen it all and then we throw something new at them. I mean, that's just even more exciting to
see. Were you a fan like me growing up?
Well, this is the first Disney movie that I remember as a kid. Like, I'm 35, so this was the first one that I can vividly remember and know that... So knowing that I was able to come and bring it to life is the most special thing that I could ever have, you know, and seeing people that are in the audience that come and they're like, I remember this. I remember this whole show when I was, you know, 8, 9 years old, and now I'm reliving it again and I remember where I was when I saw it. Those are the most exciting things that you see. And because I remember where I was when I first saw the movie too. So yeah. It's really, really great.
I love Prince Ali, wonderful he, Ali Ababa.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favourite number to knock out?
I actually think Friend Like Me is definitely my favourite one to... The opening is actually really exciting as well, but Friend Like Me is definitely the number that just doesn't stop. Like, you think that you've hit the peak of it, and I'm like, wait a second, here's another verse, let's throw another thing in there. So seeing the audience response after doing that number is just so... Just, it's brilliant, you know. They get as much out of it as I do every night, which is great.
Can't wait to see you in July.
July.
And yep. Hopefully we can show you around and see
I can't wait. I'm really, really excited. Good. Thank you.
No worries.
Mix 94.5's Big Breakfast with Claire Z, Matt and Kimber. Weekdays from 6 a.m.